Morning. Today's daf in Nida is daf Nun Hey. Started the new parak yesterday. The seventh parak of Masechta opens up with a discussion with a list of items that are subject to Tuma. Obviously, this Masechta is primarily focused on the Nida and Tumas Nida and the woman herself. But now, this Mishnah we started yesterday talks about the actual discharge. The discharge that comes out of a woman, and for that matter, a man as well, and other items that are an avatumah, source of tumah. So the Mishnah listed items that are the actual discharge themselves and the degree of tumah that they are. So if you look back at the Mishnah, I'm not going to read through the entire Mishnah, but dama nida basar ames matam lachem matam yaveshim, that when you have the actual discharge of a woman, the blood coming out from a woman, so we're talking about the actual dam itself, and also basar ames as well, but that's not going to be our topic for today. So it's matam lach v'yavish. It's even it comes out in solid form or in liquid form. It does not matter how it comes out of the woman. Nevertheless, it's going to be an avatuma. Contrast that, says the Mishnah, to the zov. That is the discharge that comes out of a man to make him a zov. Vehanea veharok. And also mucus and spit. Sheretz, nevela, vashich, vazer, metam lachim, metam yaveshim. These other items are metam alach, but not metam yavesh. Okay, that was the Mishnah that we learned yesterday. The Gemara's question started off with menahan emili. How do I know? How do I know that blood that comes out of a woman is going to be metamach lach v'yavish, both in liquid form and in solid form as well? And the Gemara darshan yesterday, and the question of exactly where it comes from. But nevertheless, we concluded yesterday through a drasha that the dam is metame boch lach v'yavish. And we went even one step further. Even if it comes out in solid form, meaning it didn't come out in liquid form and then solidify afterwards, it came out even in solid form. That's also going to be considered dam nida. That's also going to have a tumah. The Gemara persisted, and imahi osa. So we'll pick it up this morning from where we left off yesterday, a little bit. We did this a couple lines yesterday, but anyway, imahi osa mishkav moshel v'tamei adam l'tamei begadim avdama nami osa mishkav moshel v'tamei adam l'tamei begadim. So the Gemara's question is like this: well, we know that there's a comparison between the woman who had the discharge and the actual discharge itself. The woman who has a discharge is a tumas nida, and as we've discussed many times in our masechta, a woman who's metame tumas nida, so she's metame mishkav moshav. Special tumah assigned for a nida, also shared by a zav and a zava, and a yoledis as well, which is that when they sit in an item, the item becomes tummy to the same degree they're tummy. The item has to be designed for sitting. We discussed that just a couple days ago. But when she sits on an item or lies down in a bed, so the chair and the bed are going to be metame with a degree of an avatama. One, we say the same thing regarding the actual blood itself, that if the blood finds itself on a chair, so let's say that the blood is sitting on the chair. I know that's a funny way to describe it, but let's say it's sitting on the chair, and therefore the chair itself should be an avatuma. Why don't we say that? So atu dama bar mishkav moshav hu. So the Gemara's question is: wait one second. You're giving animation to an inanimate object. Meaning we're talking about blood, and you're saying that the blood is sitting. Blood doesn't sit. People sit, but not blood. So the Gemara says, okay. But it doesn't matter. Meaning, if we're talking about inanimate objects, sometimes we do animate them, and we do describe them as doing actions that are usually exclusive for people. I'll give you an example, says the Gemara, and that is Evan Menugas. And we know the halacha is that people are subject to tsaras, and clothing is subject to tsaras, and houses are subject to tsaras. And you can have a stone of a house, which is an Evan Menugas. Now, as far as an Evan Mugas is concerned, so obviously it's a stone, it's an inanimate object, and yet the way we're about to describe it is that it sits. The Gemara quotes the following Braisa. So here in the Braisa, we are entertaining the idea that Evan Menugas should have the status of Mishkav Moshav, so that when the Evan Menugas is quote-unquote sitting on a chair, we could say it's simpler. In other words, it's just simply on the chair. But I'm going to use the verb sitting in order to give the chair the status of Mishkav Moshav. So I would have thought that the chair now is going to be subject to Tumah. And Tumas Mishkav Moshav, meaning the chair is an Avatumah. Vidinhu. And the Gemara says, and I'll tell you what. Look at it logically. Umazav Shena Matame Bibiya Ose Mishkav Moshav. Now, when it comes to a Zav, so a Zav is not Matame Bibiya. Just because a Zav walks into a house, the house does not become Tame. So Evan Menugas, which already has a more stringent position in terms of tumah. The Evan of Menugas that has walked into a house, the house becomes tameh. This halacha, take a look at Rashi, where he teaches us where we learned this from. But anyway, that's the halacha regarding Evan Menugas. So already we see that it's operating on a higher threshold of tumah. So eino din shematame mishkav amoshav latame adam latame begadim. So therefore, it should be matame mishkav amoshav. If the rock, the tsaras rock, is sitting on the chair, so we should say now that the chair is subject to the tumas mishkav amoshav. So tamalamar hazav alo evan menugas. So that we have a drasha. Now the only thing that dispelled our notion is the drasha. If we didn't have a drasha, we would have said that the evan menugas is sitting on the chair, and only because of gzeiras hakasuv we don't say that. So to which the gemara says now taima demi atekra. So the Gemara says, okay, so now we have set ourselves up with a question. So don't sit on a chair. Now it happens to be that we don't conclude that way, but only because of a drasha. But short of the drasha, we were totally prepared to make this argument. So fine. So now let's go back to our damnida. The damnida is sitting on the chair. And so therefore the chair should be subject to Tumas Mishkav Amoshav. So the Gemara's response is umina. So the Gemara says, fine. You know what? The drasha that we made for Evan Menugas, we're going to do the same thing for Dam Nida as well. Lav mi amar dazav velo Evan Menugas, hachanami amakra asher hi yosheves alav, hi velo dama. So if you look at the psukim as it describes the Tumas Mishkav Amoshav of Nida, it says that she is sitting on it, and the word he, not only a pronoun describing her, but also serving as a miut as well, and excluding the Dam Nida from Mimitami Mishkav Amoshav. E, continuing in the Gemara, we're on the top of Nun Hamad Aleph. E mahi matame beve misama. Af madvename matame beve misama. So the Gemara says, okay, but we know that there is an unusual tama that is assigned for a nida. And this is what's called Evan misama. Evan misama, we don't hear that often throughout Shas. Every now and then, the Gemara reintroduces us to this type of tama. What exactly it is, it's not super clear. I'm going to look at Rashi over here on the top of the Amud, where Rashi gives a description of what his understanding of Evan Misama is in terms of this special, unusual transmission. You can see there the first Tosfos on this Amud takes issue with Rashi, but we're going to, this morning, just stay with Rashi. Rashi writes, Imam Masa Nida Chamor Latame Evan Misama. Now, Rashi describes, what is Evan Misama? Evan Gedola. Hamusma Al Hakelim. Venida Niseis Aleha. So the way Rashi describes it is as follows. You have a really heavy stone. You can't pick it up. And it's on top of the stone is a nida. Underneath the stone are some begadim. And Rashi writes, V'nida nises alah metame begadim shetachas ha'evin. So the clothing that is under the stone is going to become tame. And Rashi quotes Taras Kohanim. That gets us to that conclusion. Anyway, this is Rashi's description of Evan Misama. Okay, a somewhat unusual form of transmission of Tumah. Rashi puts that into the category of Masa. Anyway, for our purposes right now, here's all the Gemara, all we need to know in order to appreciate the Gemara. So, a Nida is Metame Be'evim Mesama. So, if that's true regarding the Nida, that's the woman who is experiencing the discharge, the same thing should be true regarding the blood itself. Af Madvename Metame Be'evim Mesama. And so, why don't we say the same thing regarding the blood? Now, in terms of Mishkav Amoshav, we just try to do this. And we had the drasha that told us that we don't do it because of the word he. But over here, what do we say? I'm Ravashi, I'm a Krava, no say Osam, Osam Yutahu. So the Gemara basically goes with a very similar approach, in that if you read the Psukim that open up this this form of Tuma, the Evan Misama, Vanosei Osam, and the word Osam is a miut, it limits Osam Miutahu. Meaning only the woman is able to transmit Tuma through this this unusual transmission of Evan Misama, but not the blood itself. Basar Hames. We are now continuing the Mishnah. Go back to the Mishnah that we saw yesterday. So we already talked about Dam and Nidas, Matam Alach V'Yavesh. The Gemara, the first sugya of our Gemara that we just finished, gave us a source. How do we know? That's Matami both in liquid and solid form. And now we talk about the Basar Hames. Now the Basar Hames is the flesh of the human remains. So it's Matam Alach V'Yavesh, both in liquid form and in solid form. We say liquid form over here, we'll go back to a point that we made yesterday, we just simply mean that it's moist, it's hydrated, meaning it's not dry. And so basically when it comes to basar meis, the contrast over here between wet and dry is just simply moist versus all the liquid is gone and it's just dry. I'd say bone dry, which is not a bad way to describe it. It's just a little bit confusing because we're not talking about the bones. We're talking about the actual flesh itself. So, minalan. So the Gemara wants to know, what's the source for this? How do I know that when it comes to the human remains, the flesh of human remains, it's matami both lach v'yavesh? So the Gemara is going to bring down a machlokas amarayim, exactly what the source is. Amar Reish Lakish, Amar Kor, l'chol tum aso, l'chol tum os, ha-pereshes mimenu. All tumas that come off of the body. Meaning the Torah is very expansive when describing the tumah coming off of a human, and all remains of a human are going to be exposed and subject to tumah, including the basar hamesa that's already dry. Rabbi Yochanan amar o be'etam adam, o be'kever adam. So Rabbi Yochanan turns to the parsha of Chukas, where there the Torah talks about tumas meis, right, in conjunction with paraduma. Paraduma is the solution to how to become tahor from tumas meis. But within that parsha, the Torah gives a description of tumas meis, a very brief one. But the Torah says, "O be'etzem adam, o be'kever adam." Now there, the Torah talks about the bone. Now dumya de'etzem, ma'etzem yavesh, afkan yavesh. So just like a bone is going to be subject to tuma when it's dry, the same thing is true regarding the meis. Even when the flesh itself is dry, it's going to be subject to tuma. Okay, so Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish are having a debate. But what debate are they having? Meaning they both agree that basar meis is tamei both lach v'yavish. It's just a question of which drasha, where do we get it from? So one opinion is that we get it from Parshas Amor, l'chol tumaso, and the other opinion, Rav Yochanan says we get it from Parshas Chukas. But aren't they agreeing? So the Gemara says no. Now there is a subtle difference between the two. My b'nai v'kabinau de'ifrach afruchei. So the Gemara says the difference between them is that it's so dry, it's a powder. Now, Rashi writes, it's really dry. It's like almost at the point of powder. Now, Rav Yochanan tahor dedumya de'etzem be'inam ve'etzem lo mifrach. So according to Rav Yochanan, that already is past the point of tumah. Why? Because Rav Yochanan learned it from Parshas Chukas. In the comparison between the flesh of human remains to the bone, we know that bone, even though obviously it is, and now I say it literally, it's bone dry, but with the nature of a bone is that it still has its integrity. It's still being held together. So that means that the only time that the flesh is going to be tameh is that even though it's bone dry, but it's still held together. That's Rav Yochanan. Whereas as opposed to Reish Lakish, who learns it from the pasuk of l'chol tumaso, so Reish Lakish does not have any limitation. Even if the flesh is so dry that it's at this point in time crumbling, it's still going to be an avatuma. The Gemara says that's the difference between Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. Gemara challenges, Meisvei. We're going to be learning a number of Mishnayos and Braisos. Basar HaMeis Shehufrach Tahor. So first we're learning together a Braisa. A Mishnah, okay. So Basar HaMeis Shehufrach Tahor. So if you have the flesh of a human, and it is so dry now that it's crumbling, it's going to be Tahor. Okay. So that sounds very much like the position of Rav Yochanan, and not like the position of Reish Lakish. So Hasam de Amar Hasam de Ikmach v'Havi Afra. The Gemara says it was so dry, it was so brittle that it was not only bone dry, but basically it was already reduced to ash, to dust. It is the Gemara describes it as kemach. It's almost like a flour. It becomes that powdery, and even at that point in time, even Reish Lakish will tell you that it's no longer going to be a source of tumah. So Meis Ve'ed the Gemara challenges once again. Kol Shem Meis Matame Chutz Min Hashinayim Vaser Vatziporin Uvishas Chiburin Hakol Tame. Anything in a mace is going to be tame, except for the teeth, the hair, and the fingernails. As if they are connected, then they're going to be tame. But any human remains are going to be a source of tuma, except for detached teeth, detached hair, and detached fingernails. Now the Gemara says, now let's think about this for a moment. What do we just see together? Teeth. Teeth is much like a bone. And as long as it's detached, it's going to be tahor. Well, why? Meaning, if both according to Rav Yochanan and according to Reish Lakish, you have the human remains, and even if it's not a bone, even if it's quote-unquote flesh, if it's dry, it's going to be a source of tumah. And so over here, so fine. So you're not going to put the teeth, you're not going to put it under the category of bone. Which, right, it's a challenging position, but let's just assume that because the Braisa says, once detached, it's no longer a source of tumah. Can it be any worse than the flesh coming off the body? And haven't we all agreed that when it comes to the flesh coming off the body, both Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish agree that if it's held together and it's one mass, so then it's going to be an avatumah. It's going to be a source of tumah. So why should it be now that teeth, once detached, is no longer going to be an avatumah? It can't be any worse than the basar hametz. So the Gemara, and as Rashi points out, this now is going to be a question on both positions, both Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Gemara's response. Amar Rav Ander Ba'ava Dumya De'etzem. Ma etzem shenivra imo, av kol shenivra imo. So the Gemara says, okay. So in order for basar hametz to be an avatumah, it has to also share the nature of bone. Now bones, although over the course of a life, so yes, there is some regeneration, but mostly the bone that you're born with is the bone that you keep for the rest of your life. And so therefore, anything that follows in that kind of characteristic is going to be subject to tumas mates. Now the Gemara is making the argument, and the Gemara is going to say it very clearly in just a moment, that's not true by teeth. Because when it comes to teeth, teeth didn't come with you when you were born. Okay, now, teeth does come with you when you're born, but I guess the Gemara's point is that it's not in its exposed state, right? Although, as much as I want to defend the Gemara, based on what, you know, the little that we know nowadays, but the Gemara is going to say very clearly that the teeth didn't come with you when you were born. So, but still, it could mean, the Gemara could just simply mean that it wasn't in its exposed state. V'ayika se'arvitzi ponshin evrayim ovetaharin. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about hair? What about fingernails? You're born with hair, you're born with fingernails, and we said that once they're detached, they're no longer a source of tumah. Why not? If the entire criteria is something you're born with, so hair and fingernails is something you're born with. So the Gemara says, okay, so what we're going to do the same thing. We're going to use bone as our base model of something which is subject to tumah, eligible to tumas meis, and we're going to look at actually two criteria. One is that you have to be born with it, and two is that it doesn't regenerate. Okay, so let's say, for example, terrible accident, and part of your bone is cut off. So the rest of the bone is not going to regenerate. That's what the Gemara describes as gizom machlif. And then on top of that, another aspect of the bone is that you are born with it. So when we're talking now about the detached parts of the human remains, of the teeth and the hair and the fingernails, so they're not all the same, but each one of them does not share one of the characteristics. So let's go body part by body part. So as far as the teeth is concerned, so the not like the bone where the baby is not born with the teeth, and again, I'll insert as just to help us better understand it. It's not in its exposed state. So therefore, the teeth does not qualify, and therefore, once the teeth is detached from the remains, so it's no longer going to be a source of tumah. And as far as hair and fingernails are concerned, so although a baby is born with hair and fingernails, but it's the kind of thing where once cut, it will regenerate, and that's unlike bone, and therefore, it's not going to be a source of tumah once it's detached. Okay, so parts of the human body where once detached from the body, it does not have, it's not going to be an avatumah, is so far teeth, hair and fingernails. Hare or de gizo machlif. The Gemara says, okay, let's continue. And now we're going to be talking about the skin. Now skin, gizo machlif. Now the Gemara is going to assume right now that skin regenerates. Okay. I know, I'm getting a lot of approval. Skin regenerates. Yes and no. You take enough off and it's not going to regenerate. So right. So vahare or de gizo machlif. So, and what you're going to see, it's really interesting. Because the Gemara is literally going to be taking both sides of this argument. Meaning, right now we're in version number one. You don't know yet there's a version number two, but it's coming up. Right now we're in version number one. And in version number one, the Gemara's assumption is that skin does regenerate. In version number two, the Gemara is going to go in the other direction. Skin does not regenerate. So clearly within the Gemara is stuck between these two positions. But right now, let's go step by step. Right now we're assuming that skin does in fact generate. Utanan, and we learned the following Mishnah, Hagluda, Rebbe Meir, Machshir, V'Chacham, and Poslim. An animal that does not have its skin, right? Rashi says either it was worked too hard or illness. The animal does not have its skin. So, is it a treifa? So, Machlokis, Tanaim. We saw this back in Chulin. The Remeir says that the animal is still kosher, and the Chachamim say that it's pasul. Ve'afilu Rabban lo kapasul ela de adahachi v'hachi shalei be'avira u'meisa. Now the Gemara right now is assuming that Remeir and the Chachamim agree with the principle that it's going to regenerate. And so if it's going to regenerate, so you understand Remeir's position. So the skin's going to regenerate. It's not a trefa. It's going to heal. What's the Chachamim's position? It'll take time for it to regenerate. And during the interim, it has now exposed itself to the elements, literally. And so therefore, it's going to die just simply because it's in this interim period while regenerating, it's going to die because of its exposure. But they both agree that the skin's going to regenerate. Ulam gizamachlif. Vitaninan. Okay, so step number one is that we just established that skin does in fact regenerate. And we learned in a Mishnah, there's another Mishnah we saw back in Chulin, Elu sa'aroseim kif saram, or ha'adam, sha'oroseim kif saram, that as far as skin and flesh being one in the same halachic status, it's the or ha'adam, which now we're kind of stuck. Meaning the Mishnah Chulin tells us that the skin of a human has the same status as its flesh. Meanwhile, we just learned, that hair and fingernails are not going to be an avatama, they're not going to be a source of tuma, once detached from the body. Why? Because they're not like the bone. Bone doesn't regenerate. Hair and fingernails do regenerate. And we just learned together that skin regenerates. So now, here's what we should conclude. The conclusion should be that skin should have the same status as fingernails and hair. Once detached from the body, it is not going to be a source of tumah. Okay, and so all this presents itself as a problem. Ha'it marlam or ula dvar Torah or adam tahor. So Ula says, okay, and here's how I'll resolve everything. Really, the skin of a human is really tahor. Because for all the reasons that we just pointed out, in order for human remains to be tummy, it has to follow the characteristic of a bone. A bone does not regenerate, so any other parts of the body does not regenerate. Skin does regenerate. And so therefore, once skin is detached, so it's not going to be an avatuma. All this is, Ula says, minatora. My time amru tamei, gzirishem yasa, damar rosaviv, imo, shetichim lechamor. So the Gemara says, we've heard this before. It's not the first time we've heard it, although it is shocking. I'm just, just pointing out that we've been shocked with this line numerous times in Shas, a couple times in Shas. And that is that the Chachamim branded and gave a rabbinic tumah to the skin of the human, because if they didn't do that, so then people would take the skin and repurpose the skin of their loved ones. And what makes the Gemara even more shocking is that they would do it for the skin of their mother and their father. It's hard to understand the motivation of people, why people would do that, to honor them. It's difficult. I'm not really sure if I can intelligently explain what would be the motivation of people doing that. But so that people won't do that, so the Chachamim branded and gave the skin a Tumah derabanan. Now, before we get to the next version, where the Gemara is now going to take the other side of this issue, Tosfos asked a question which hopefully all of you are wondering. And that is that the Chachamim slapped a Tumah derabanan on the skin so that people wouldn't use it. We're talking about human remains. Human remains is Asar Ba'ana. You're not allowed to get benefit from human remains. Why would the Chachamim have to put a Gzeira D'Rabbanan not to use it, but a Tumah D'Rabbanan not to use it? People won't use it, meaning if they're following the Halacha, so skin is already going to be subject to an Isser of Hana, an Isser D'Raisa of Hana. Tosfos is bothered by this very question. Second wide line down in the Amud. Shema Yaseh Shetichem Im Tomer, V'alo Meis Asar B'Hana. A dead body, you're not allowed to get benefit from it. D'Gamrin Hashem Shami Egla Rufa. We learn it now through Gzeira Shava. And so, why would the Chachamim have to put a rabbinic tumah on the skin, so that people wouldn't get benefit from it? So, Tosfos has a couple of answers. Yeah?
Maybe the detached hair, you can have benefit from it.
Okay, so answer number one, that's going to take us to answer number two. So, answer number one of Tosfos is that, and it's a psychological answer, if it's just Isurim, so people, obviously, we'd like to think that we are sensitive to all Isurim, but okay, people are a little bit lax in the area of Isur. But when it comes to Toma, and we saw this many times, there are a number of proofs throughout Shas that this is so they're just more careful by Toma. more scared of Tumah, more careful of Tumah. Okay, I'm not sure if I can explain why it is that they were more careful of Tumah, but despite the fact that it's already Asr, but once they slap a Tumah Darabanan, so that'll give people more pause and more distance from making usage of it, even though it already has an Asr Hana. That's one possibility, says Tosos. The other possibility, Danny, is what you suggested. The Ode, Kachamatarim, but not La'achar Zrika, sorry. The Ode Nira, the Or Eino Bechal Basar Le'asar Bahana. The Isser Hana'a does not go on the skin. The Isser Hana'a is only going on the flesh. And Tosos makes an argument of why this should be so. And so therefore, the Isser Hana'a does not extend to the skin. So therefore, by skin, there's no Isser Hana'a. And now it's just a question of Tumah. And so we just learned together, at least according to the first version of the Gemara, there's no Tumah da'araisa on the skin. But the Chachamim slapped a Tumah da'raban on the skin because, again, if not, people would have repurposed and made usage of the skin of their loved ones. Okay. That is all version number one. Ika da'amri. Now, in version number two, Hare or de'ain gizomachlif. So here the Gemara now takes the other side of whether or not skin regenerates or does not regenerate. And right now, the Gemara's assumption is that skin does not regenerate. And it's funny. In other words, it could very well be that the difference between version number one and version number two is simply how much skin is removed. Okay? A little bit of skin, the body will regenerate. A lot of skin, the body will not regenerate. But, okay. But right now, in version number two, the assumption is skin does not regenerate. Utanan, and here we're going to go again. First, we're going to quote the Mishnah in Chulin regarding an animal that does not have skin. Again, Rashi explained, either through illness or through hard work. And is the animal a trefa? So the Machlokes HaTanayim, between Rameir and the Chachamim. And the Chachamim said that's possible. That the animal with no skin on it is going to die. It is a trefa. And therefore it's possible. V'afilu Rebbe Meir lo kamach she'er ala dekar bisra v'chaya. So, and as far as Rameir is concerned, who says that it's not a trefa, it's not because he's saying that the skin's going to regenerate. No, he agrees fundamentally skin is not going to regenerate. It just happens to be that the external portion of the animal's flesh is going to harden and is going to serve as protection for the animal. But it's not because the skin's going to regenerate. Ula elam engez machlif. So the amar ula dvar Torah or adam tahor. And ula says that min a Torah, skin of a human is tahor. And so now, we're confused, right? Because we're assuming in the second version that skin does not regenerate. And if skin does not regenerate, so it should follow the same rules as a bone. The bone is an avatama, and so should the skin be an avatama. It was born with you. It doesn't regenerate. It shares the same characteristics as a bone, and therefore it should be tame. And Ula says that min haTorah, skin is tahor. That line of Ula, that position of Ula is confusing. It seems very difficult. Gemara's response, Ki itmar de Ula, seifa itmar. No, you misunderstood. Ula wasn't talking about just skin that was taken off of the body. That, Ula will agree, is going to be an avatuma. He's talking about the next part of the Mishnah. And we're going to learn it right now. V'kulin sha'avdan, shehilach mehem kedei avoda tahorin. Chutz mi or adam. When you have skin that comes off of either a nevela or a human, and it's processed, and exactly what the processing is, you either tanned it or you walked over it, right? The kedei avoda. You can see Rashi in terms of how long a processing it has to go through. But anyway, the point is that once it is processed, it is no longer going to be considered remains of the animal, remains of the human. And it is now going to be tahor, except for the skin of a human. Now, on this, Ula comments, V'amar Ula dvar Torah or Adam ki avdu tahor. No, really, when you process skin, it doesn't matter what it comes off of. Once it's processed, it is no longer going to be an avatuma. Uma tamam rutame. And meanwhile, by human remains, by human skin, even though it's processed, and even though me'ikar hadin it's tahor, the Chachamim slapped a tuma de Rabbanan. Why did they do that? And we know the answer. Adam or imo shitichim. So because, again, the concern that people are going to repurpose the skin and reuse it, and so the Chachamim slapped a Tumah d'Rabbanan. Okay, so, where I'm sorry, before I go on in the Gemara. So where are we right now in terms of parts of the human, remains of the human that is subject to tumah, parts of the human, the remains of the human that's not subject to tumah. So here we stand. Bone, flesh, and avatumah. And by the way, we've made these points already before, not exactly the same. The flesh is metame b'maga v'masa, ohel. A bone is only going to be metame b'maga v'masa, not ohel. Fine. There are scenarios where bones are going to be metame b'ohel as well. Okay. But nevertheless, the point is that human remains are only going to be an avatumah if it shares the characteristics of a bone, i.e. it's born with the person and it does not regenerate. However, if it's not born with a person, or if it regenerates, it's not going to be subject to tumah. And so what is now off the table in terms of tumas mace? So it's going to be hair, fingernails, teeth, all once detached, are not going to be an avatumah, and skin, debatable, depending on whether you go with version number one, version number two. Hare basar, now we're continuing in the Gemara, on the bottom of the Amud, hare basar digizom achlif etameh. Now flesh regenerates. And meanwhile, it's a source of tumah. Amar Marba Rav Ashi, Basar Naseh Mekomo Talekes. So the Gemara says it does not regenerate. Your assumption is wrong. In other words, the area where the flesh was cut out. So Rashi writes, there'll be ridges, there'll be grooves. Rashi, I'll read the Rashi. Klomar. Roshim Nirabach, Ritz Oguma, V'ein Kula Choser. Avalser V'tziporin, Ein Nitilasam Nikar. Hair and fingernails, when you cut them off, they're going to grow back, and it's as if nothing happened. But when you're talking about flesh, even if there is some growth that comes back, it will be permanently scarred, and forever people will know that it does not all generate. Okay. Aval Azov. Okay, so we're up to the next line of the Mishnah. When it comes to the Zav discharge that comes out of a man, so that is Metame, but only Lach, not Yavesh. We start with the Gemara. Avalazov zov minalan detanya zovo timei. Tamei limit alazov shuhu tamei. The parsha in the Torah that describes zov is at the end of parsha's mitzora. After going through tzaras, two parshas of tzaras, right? Tazria and mitzora. Most of Tazria and most of mitzora deal with tzaras. So then at the end of parsha's mitzora, so the Torah teaches us about a zov, a balkeri, a zava, a nida, Boal Nida. Okay. All those tumas are described at the end of Parshas Metzora. In the beginning of Perek Tezvav, in other words, all this is contained in Perek Tezvav. So in the beginning of Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Beis, Dabru B'nei Yisrael V'amart Alem Ish Ish Ki Yez Zav Mi Bisaro Zavo Tamehu. So the Torah describes when the man has a Zav discharge, so he's going to be Tameh. Now, the simple pshan, the Pasuk, is who's going to be Tameh? The person experiencing the discharge. We're now going to go one step further, and we are going to learn together the drasha that it's not just talking about the person experiencing the discharge, but the actual discharge itself. Let's see the Gemara inside. Zovotame, I'm sorry, aval hazov, zov minalan detanya. Zovotame, limit al hazov shu tame. So the zov itself is tame. Valo dinhu. So the Gemara says, now without the drasha, and by the way, let me just go back, explain the drasha even a little bit better. If you look in Pasuk Beis, Dabru B'nei Yisrael V'amart Alma Ishishki Yazav Mi Besaro, so the Torah could have just left out the word Zovo altogether and just simply said, Tamehu. Person has a discharge, he's Tameh, period. That word Zovo is extraneous. What the Drasha now is teaching us is that it's actually talking about the Ziva itself, meaning not only is the person experiencing the discharge going to be Tameh, but the Ziva itself. To which the Gemara says, I need a Drasha, why do I need a Drasha? Isn't it logical? If the Zav is making the person experiencing a Tameh, can't you argue very simply that the Zav itself is also going to be a source of Tumah? To which the Gemara says, if it's just the argument, it is not a convincing argument. We saw this earlier in our Masechta as well, that look at the Sira Mishtaleach. As the Ish Iti is taking the Sira Mishtaleach to the cliff, so that person in transit, en route, is going to be Tameh. Even though at this juncture, the Sira Mishtaleach is not going to be Tameh. So something can be causing Tumah, even though it itself is not Tameh. So it's obviously not a convincing argument. So Afatal Titmal Zeshafa Pishagorim Tumah Achim Huatzmo Tahor. So something can cause somebody else Tumah, and yet it itself is Tahor. So Tamalamar Zovo Tameh, Limit Al Zov Shu Tameh. I need the Drasha. Therefore, I need the Drasha. Because without the drasha, the Kal V'chomer is not a good Kal V'chomer. So the Gemara says, okay, now we're going to talk about degree of tumah. The zov discharge is tumah. We all agree. And we just learned the drasha together. Maybe in terms of degree of tumah, it's only metame b'maga, not b'masa. And that's not unprecedented. The sheretz is metame b'maga, not b'masa. So me did the havei sheretz. I'm Rabibi Barabai b'maga lo itzirchra, the logar m'shech v'zera. So the Gemara says no. Because we already know that it's tame b'maga, it's no different than shech v'zera. It's no less than shech v'zera. So we know that when a man has a shech v'zera discharge, the zera itself is tame. Tame b'maga. So the zav discharge is no worse than that, so it already is tame b'maga. And so now, what's the drasha coming to teach us? One step more. It's tame b'maga uvemasa. Contact and carrying. So we're turning now to the Amud Beis, Kitzter Kral Masa. The pasuk here to teach us about masa. Ve'ema b'masa mitame adam uvegadim b'maga adam mitame begadim la mitame. Midedahave amaga nevela. So the Gemara says, okay. So I'm with you that it's metame b'maga v'masa. But can we not make the following distinction? When it's tame, when a person carries the zav discharge, so he's going to be tame, and the clothing that he's wearing is tame, this is what's called being metame adam uvigadam. But if it's just maga, if it's just contact, so he'll be tame, but the clothing that he's currently wearing, is not going to be tame. Okay, and again, these are degrees of tumah. We've gone over these ideas many times before. So the higher degree, obviously, is that your tummy and the clothing that you're wearing is currently tummy as well. If you think about it through just regular transmission, by the way, it does kind of make sense. Meaning in the sense that the nevela that you're touching is an avatama. Well, I know we're not talking about nevela, but just follow me. The nevela you're touching is an avatama. You're touching the nevela, now you become tummy, but with every transmission, it drops off. What are you? You're now a rishon. Are you going to be metame the clothing that you're wearing? No, because you're only a rishon, and the clothing that you're now touching is obviously it's a keli, and a keli does not become tummy from a vlada tuma. Okay. Okay, fine. So when the Torah wants to tell us that you and your clothing become tummy, the Torah says it beferish. Rashi over here is going to quote the Pesukim. So what the Gemara now is advocating is that for the Zav discharge, so I'm with you. It's metame b'maga v'masa, but we're just simply going to make a distinction between maga versus masa. Maga, begadim, sorry, adam, not begadim. Masa, both adam and begadim. And the Gemara says, and that's precedented. Where is that precedented? Nevela. Midi dahavi amaga nevela. And if you go through Rashi here, I'm not going to go through it, but top Rashi. Rashi cites the Pesukim that teaches that by Nevela, Maga, it's Adam. Masa, Adam ubegadim. So why don't we say the same thing regarding Zov, lo sagadacha? The Gemara says, I'll tell you why we're not going to say that. Titania, because of the following brayso, Achayim Amrim. Hazavet Zovo, lezachal nekeva. So Makish Zovo, lo. The Zov discharge is compared to him. Mahu, lo chalakta be magola maso, letame Adam, letame begadim. When you touch a Zov itself, you're touching the actual Zav himself. So there you're going to be metame begadim, you're going to be metame both Adam ubegadim. Not only you, but the clothing that you're wearing is going to be tame. And again, next Rashi goes through the Pesukim there as well. I'm not going to go through them right now, but that's when you touch a Zav. So af Zovo Kane. So the same thing is going to be true regarding the Ziva itself. The actual discharge itself, if you were to touch it or to carry it, in either transmissions of tama, it's going to be tame Adam ubegadim. So the Gemara says, okay, now it's crowded here. Because we now have two drushas that are teaching us basically the same point. And once I have this most recent drusha of Vazavit Zavo, so then I didn't need the previous drusha. So I'm Rav Yehuda midiskarta itzrich sakadat chamir sakadat chamin asir mishalech yechiyach shagarm tur malachim v'hu atzmo tahor. So the Gemara says, well, and I need both drashas, and I'll tell you why. If I only had the first drasha, let me say it the other way. If I only had the second drasha, I would have said, I know there's a comparison between the Zav and his actual discharge, but again, let's take the Sirah Mishtaleach into consideration. Sirah Mishtaleach is a cause of Tumah, but itself doesn't become Tumah. I'll say the same thing regarding the Zav discharge. It causes a person experiencing the discharge Tuma, but it itself is not Tame. V'im ishum azav zavo, and what? The pasuk of azav zavo, eliminyanahu de'asa. That's teaching me a different halacha. Halacha of the number of Zav discharges and the difference between discharges 1, 2, and 3. The Amar Zav Chad, Zavo Tarte, Uva Shlishi, Akshe Rechman L'Nekeva. So, the halacha is the first Zav discharge emitted by a man, that's one. The second one, that's two. Those are only B'Ratzon, not B'Ones. We've discussed this many times, that for the Zav discharge to become to become Tameh, it has to come out without external forces. It has to be internally generated. Unlike a woman who has a Zav discharge, a Zava discharge, where there does not make a difference between Onis and Ratzon. When you get to number three, discharge number three, then there is no discrimination between man and woman in terms of, even if it's externally generated, it's going to be Tame.
I thought if a woman was terrorized, became a Zava, then...
No. So, Kasa Rechman is Zavo, Tame. So that's what we are learning now from Zavo Tame, meaning drasha number one. So drasha number one gets us to the point of we're comparing the discharge to him. Because without the drasha, I would have had the Sira Meshaleach telling me otherwise. And if it would have just been the pasuk of Hazavit Zavo, so there we would have used it for another drasha, notably the one of 1, 2, and 3 that we just went through. V'hasha d'arachman Zavo Tame, drosh bein amihai. So the Gemara says, okay. So once I drasha number one, what do I now know? I now know that the Zav who experienced it is Tameh, and the discharge itself is Tameh. Once I'm there, so now I'll go to the next drasha, allowing me to teach me degrees of Tumah. We already have another drasha, we learned that from the Pasuk, notably the numbers 1, 2, and 3, but we can also talk in terms of degrees of Tumah, that just like the Zav himself is Tameh, Adam Ubigadim, both in Magan Masa, same thing is true regarding the actual Zav discharge. It's Metame, both Magamasa and Adam and Begadim. Okay. Harok. Okay, that's fine. No, because it's... No. In other words, it's still a source of Tumah. In other words, it's going to be Metame, the Ishiti. Your point is wonderful, but still doesn't... It doesn't take away from the fact that you have something that gives off tumo, and it itself is not going to become tummy. Harok, we are now up to the spit. Rok minalan. So how do I know that the spit, now regarding spit, again, it's in the Mishnah as something that is metame only lach, not yavesh. How do I know the spit altogether is tummy? Rok minalan detani v'chi harok. It's a pasuk. Again, end of Parshas Metzora. Perek tezvav. So yachlaf apishlo naga. Gemara has a really interesting havamina. So you have a Zav, and he spits in your general direction. Doesn't make it to you. Okay, maybe you should be Tameh. It's a funny Havamina. The Gemara is going to ask, where did the Havamina even come from? So Tamalamar bitahor, ad shiga bitahor. No, the spit has to make it to the Tahor. The Torah says, batahor. How do I know about other discharges that come out of the facial area? Kecho v'neo, the different forms of phlegm. You can see Tosus over here who tries to make a distinction between what's Keicho versus what's Neo. Okay, but in other words, different forms of phlegm and mucus that come out of your mouth. Umei ha'af. Now, mei ha'af is mucus coming out of your nose. Although, in just a moment, we're going to clarify, it may be mucus coming out of your nasal mucus coming out of your mouth. I'll get back to that point in just a moment. So, minalan, how do I know they're included? Tamalam or v'chi yarok. Okay. V'chi yarok, the vav, the extra vav, is there for a drasha to tell me not just spit, but other biological fluids that are coming out of his mouth. Okay. And they're all going to be an avatoma. So first, let's go back to that havamina. It was a funny havamina. Amar mar, yacho afa pishlo naga, mehechitesi. Gemara's question is just wonderful. Like, the Zav spits at you. It doesn't make it to you, but it's pretty close. Okay, you should be tameh. That's a havamina. It's a funny havamina. So the Gemara says, "Sakadach Amina Neilaf Rok Rok Miyavama Mahasam Afapi Delo Naga Afachanami Delo Naga Kamash Malan." So the Gemara says, "Okay, at least I'll support the Havamina, and that is, you know, by the Yavama. So she spits in the man's general direction. Now, popular misconception: she's not spitting in the shoe. Okay, she just spits in his general direction, and the spit doesn't have to land on him. Okay. As long as she spits in his direction, that qualifies as as yarok, as spitting. So I might have thought that we're going to take that model and then apply it over here by the roke coming out of a out of a zav. Okay, it's a. I know. It's a really. The Gemara is just supporting a havamina. We're rejecting it anyway. But yes, in other words, there it's not talking about tumah tahara. Here it is talking about tumah tahara. I'm with you. The Gemara is just supporting the havamina. Okay, this spit coming out of a zav. Okay, you want to tell me it's tamei b'maga, that's fine. But we're going to go one step further. Also, it's going to be tamei b'masa. You carry the spit and you're going to become tamei. Amar Yish Lakish tan debei Rav Yishmael. Amar Krav b'tahor. Mash b'yad tahor t'mei silach. B'tahor means that you spit into the hand of the recipient. Okay, he'll be disgusted. But more importantly, for our discussion, he'll be tamei. Even though, I mean, obviously he's touching it, but even if he's not touching it, even if he's just carrying it, he's wearing a glove, whatever the case is, he's going to be tamei. And the Gemara is going to do the same thing that we did earlier this morning. Well, maybe we'll make a distinction between the degree of tumah for maga versus masa. For maga, metame adam. For masa, adam ubegadim. And again, same as the tumah for nevela. So the Gemara says we have a drasha. It says batahor, meaning in another area where we would have been slightly more makel, here we're not going to be more makel. Where are we slightly makel by nevela? Again, we're talking about a slight leniency. What's a slight leniency? That by nevela, if you carry nevela, you're tamei adam u begadim. If you touch nevela, you're only tamei adam, not begadim. We're saying now that the roke coming out of a zav is just a little bit more than that. What's a little bit more? It's metamei adam and begadim, both by maga and by masa. Ve'ema kemasa desheretz. So the Gemara says, well, maybe no. I understand. I hear what you're saying, that the roke of a zav is more machmir, but maybe more machmer than sheretz. Maybe the baseline of what we're comparing it to is sheretz. So imkein nechtav kra ba'adam, my betahor shma min atarte. Now, if we wanted to say that, the Torah would have said ba'adam. Why did it say batahor? Meaning that teaches us that we're comparing ourselves to the base model of a nevela and not that of a sheretz. Let's do just a little bit more for this morning. Mehaaf. Okay, we're talking now about not only the spit that comes out of the mouth of a zav, which, as we just learned now, is tamei b'maga uvamasa, but meha'af. Now, meha'af seemingly is talking about nasal discharge. But here the Gemara clarifies. My meha'af. Amarav b'nigrarim derech hapeh. Lefi she'yefshar le'meha'af b'lo tzichsuch erok. Okay, so what happens is as follows. Okay, and I consulted with my ENT just moments before the daf. Okay, so so what happens is that the according to Rav, so we're talking about the mucus in the nose, but we're talking about where he ingested it and then it came out through the mouth. And according to Rav, it means as follows: the nasal mucus itself is not going to be an avatama, meaning according to Rav, the nose is not a ma'ayan, and so therefore it doesn't have the status of being a wellspring, and so therefore if the nasal mucus came out through the nose, came out of the nose, it's not going to be an avatuma. It's only when going back into the mouth and outside the and then out of the mouth, then and only then. And Rav said, just give me a second. And Rav says, and why? Because when the mucus comes out of the mouth, there is going to be spit mixed in with the mucus. And so therefore, you have a wonderful blend of mucus and spit coming out of your mouth. But according to Rav, It's not the nasal mucus, but rather the spit that comes together with the nasal mucus.
You said he ingested the book. You mean to say that he took it out from his nose and put it in his mouth? Or you mean post-nasal drink?
No. From his nose? No, not externally. Internally. Okay, good. Rav Yochanan amar afilo b'negrarim derech achotam. And Rav Yochanan says, no. Even if it comes out through the nose, the mucus of the nose, according to Rav Yochanan, is going to be an avatoma. Amakas of Ramayan who? So what we have over here is really a disgusting machlokus, but a fundamental machlokus in terms of whether or not the nose is a mayan. Meaning we know that when it comes to the zav, So the mayanos, right? For lack of a better term, the wellsprings that come, the liquids that come out of wellsprings of the zav is going to be navatama. We know that the rogue coming out of his mouth is has this category of mayan. What about the nose? And what about the mucus that comes out of the nose? Does that have a status of a mayan and becomes now machlokes between Rav and Rav Yochanan? Rav says it's the nose is not a mayan, and Rav Yochanan says the nose is a mayan. What you have to deal with is the fact that the Braisa says the meha'af, the liquid of the nose, is going to be subject to an avatumah. So Rav, right, follow. Rav says that the nose is not a mayan has only one way to interpret it, which is that the mucus then went back into his throat, out of his mouth, and the only reason why it's going to be tameh is because of the spit that gets mixed in. That's the only way Rav can interpret it, because Rav holds that fundamentally the nose is not a mayan. Whereas according to Rav Yochanan, the nose is a mayan. So he's looking at the Mishnah telling us me'a'af. They'll say a very simple pshat. What's me'a'af? It's talking about the mucus that comes out of the nose, directly out of the nose. So, well, this is a good place to stop. We're gonna move up up to the head tomorrow. We're gonna start with the tear ducts, and the communication between the tear ducts and the nose and the mouth. And so we'll continue there. Okay, let's quickly recap. This morning, the sources in the Torah that dam is matame boch lach v'yavesh. So we finished that. That was the first our first discussion of this morning. Vasar ames is matame lach v'yavesh. What's the source of that? Machlok is between Rav and Rav Yochanan. Sorry, Reish Lakish and Rav Yochanan. In terms of vasar ames being matame boch lach v'yavesh. They both agree it's metame lach v'yavish. It's just a question of which pasuk they derive it from. There's going to be a subtle nafkamina between the two, where it becomes so dry, it starts to crumble. The big question in the Gemara today, in terms of what human remains are subject to tumas mace, anything that doesn't regenerate, anything that that a human is not born with, is not going to be subject to tumas mace once detached from the body. So we for sure excluded this morning hair, fingernails and teeth, once detached from the body, is not going to be subject to tumas mace. Skin, big question in the Gemara, and it really is a question of whether or not skin regenerates. Skin does not regenerate, and the Gemara takes both sides on this issue. One position is that skin does regenerate, and the Gemara says the other position, skin does not regenerate. The Gemara talked about, then moved on to the discussion of zav and the actual zav discharge, which is going to be an avatumah. How do we know that? We darshan psukim. In terms of how we know that, we actually have two psukim that we darshan, and the Gemara explained the necessity of darshaning two psukim to get us to that point. The roke, the spit that comes out of a zav, is going to be an avatoma. We have a drasha that got us to that place. And then the last thing we did this morning was the mucus that comes out of the nose. Is that going to be an avatoma when it comes out of a zav? Machlok is between Rav and Rav Yochanan. Grounded on the question of whether or not the nose is considered a mayan, Rav says it's not, Rav Yochanan says it is. Then, according to Rav, what do you do with our Mishnah when the Mishnah says meha'af? He says that's talking about the mucus that went back into your throat, out of your mouth, and it's only going to be tummy because of the spit that gets mixed in with it.